5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hello, and welcome to the Fighting Moose Podcast. I'm your host and narrator, Jason Hendrickson. This is a podcast where I retell stories, some fictional and some historical, that can be enjoyed by people of all ages. It seems lately I have seen a lot of pirate-related things, so I figured we should read a pirate story. So today, we are going to read the story titled The Privateer's Story from the book The Sandman, His Sea Stories, written by William J. Hopkins. Just as a forewarning, today's story talks about some weapons and drinking wine and rum, stuff that I always associate with a pirate story. Now, let's turn to today's story. I hope you enjoy. Let's begin.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
The Privateer Story. Once upon a time, there was a wide river that ran into the ocean, and beside it was a little city. And in that city was a wharf where great ships came from far countries. And a narrow road led down a very steep hill to that wharf, and anybody that wanted to go to the wharf had to go down the steep hill on the narrow road, for there wasn't any other way. And because ships had come there for a great many years, and all the sailors and all the captains and all the men who had business with the ships had to go on that narrow road, the flagstones that made the sidewalk were much worn. That was a great many years ago. That wharf was Captain Jonathan's and Captain Jacob's, and they owned the ships that sailed from it. And after their ships had been sailing from that wharf in the little city for a good many years, they changed their office to Boston. After that, their ships sailed from a wharf in Boston. Once in the year 1807, the brig Industry sailed from Boston for far countries with Captain Soule as her captain. There was at that time a great war between France and Spain on one side, and England and some other countries on the other side. But the English ships had to do almost all the fighting for their side that was done on the ocean. And there were a great many English and French and Spanish privateers sailing about, seeing how much harm they could do to the ships that belonged to the other side. A privateer was a vessel that was fitted out by private persons, just as if Captain Jonathan and Captain Jacob had made up their minds that the Industry would be a privateer if the United States was at war. And they would fit her out with guns and swords and cutlasses, and they would get a crew for her, and they would ask the government if she could be a privateer. And the government would probably have said that she could, and they would have sent Captain Jonathan and Captain Jacob some papers called Letters of Marque and Reprisal, which said that the Industry was a United States privateer and that she could take ships as prizes and sell them. Governments do not do that now, and a privateer is no better than a pirate, but they all did it 100 years ago. Captain Soule had thought about it a great deal, for privateers weren't very particular what ships they captured, and he wondered whether he ought to carry a whole lot of guns. He always had some guns on the ship, but not enough to make a fight with, if the other vessel had a whole lot, as privateers always did. But finally, he decided that he had better not, or he might be taken for a pirate, for his country wasn't at war, and of course he hadn't any papers. Pirates that are captured are usually short-lived, so he had sailed away without any guns worth mentioning. The Industry sailed along over the ocean for about 2 weeks, and nothing much happened, and she wasn't so very far from the coast of Spain. Perhaps she was 300 or 400 miles away. For on that voyage, she was bound for Leghorn first, and then she was going to Java and Manila. and in the middle of the forenoon of that day, the lookout in the crosstrees of the industry reported a sail heading directly for them. Captain Soule was worried about it and asked the sailor about the rig of the vessel. And the sailor said that he couldn't tell what her rig was because he couldn't see any more than her upper sails, and not much of them. But she seemed to be a brig, and he thought she was fast by the way she was rising. He thought he should be able to see her hull in less than half an hour. Captain Soule said a bad word and took his glass and went up to the crosstrees himself. But he couldn't see enough there, so he went on up the mast, and he rested the glass against the rigging and looked. It took him a long time to see anything, the rigging jumped around so, but at last he managed to see, and he came down quickly and spoke to the man at the wheel, who looked at him as if he expected some orders. "Keep her as she goes," he said. "It won't do any good to try to run away from that vessel. She can sail 3 feet to our two, and whoever she is, she has no business with us anyway." But Captain Soule knew that it would make very little difference whether she had any right to stop them or not. If her captain wanted to, he would, and the mates knew that, and the sailors knew it, so Captain Soule ordered one of the sailors to hoist the United States flag, and he kept on. The brig kept rising fast, and in a short time they could see her hull from the deck of the Industry. They saw that she was a Spanish privateer, and she hoisted the Spanish flag and kept on. And pretty soon she was nearly abreast of the Industry, and she turned a little, and there was a little puff of smoke from her side, and the sound of the report came over the water a second or two later. That was a signal for the Industry to stop. But the Industry seemed to have grown deaf, and she didn't stop, and no sailor made a move to touch a rope. And the Spanish brig seemed to be a little angry, and she turned again, and there was a bigger puff of smoke from her side, and a cannonball came skipping across the water ahead of the Industry. That was a hint that she had better stop if she knew what was good for her. But Captain Soule only had another United States flag hoisted, and it was a bigger flag than the first one. When the Spanish brig saw that the Industry wasn't going to stop, she seemed to get very angry. There was another puff of smoke from her side, and a solid shot tore through one of the sails of the Industry, leaving a ragged hole. "Well," said Captain Soule, "she's begun to talk. I guess we may as well heave to." So he had the sailors fix the sails so that the ship wouldn't go ahead, but the sailors worked slowly, and the mates didn't hurry them either. And in a few minutes, a boat put off from the Spanish brig, and the boat was filled with men. They had a pretty long way to row because Captain Soule hadn't stopped when he was asked to. But after a while, they were at the side. The officer in the Spanish boat was very much excited and talked very fast. He wanted Captain Soule to put a gangway or a ladder over the side so that he could get on board easily. But Captain Soule winked at the mate and made believe that he didn't understand. "No comprenny," he said, leaning over the side, for he thought that they could come aboard any way they were able. He had the ship stopped for them. "Donkey," said the officer in Spanish, and he scrambled up, followed by 10 of his men. The other men stayed in the boat. And Captain Soule was very polite, but he couldn't talk Spanish, and he had made believe he couldn't understand what was said. Really, he knew enough Spanish to be able to understand what the officer said, but he couldn't speak Spanish. After a while, the officer tried French, but Captain Soule made believe that he couldn't understand that either, and he said in English that he was very sorry that he didn't have any Frenchmen in the crew. So the officer gave up trying to make Captain Soule understand. And he made the crew of the Industry go in the boat, but he left Captain Soule and the mates and 10 men for a prize crew. And he told Captain Soule that he was to take the ship to Cadiz. He kept saying that name over and over. Captain Soule knew that it would be of no use to resist, and he didn't. and the crew bade him goodbye, and the boat was rowed away. Then his new Spanish crew fixed the sails so the ship would go ahead. He thought they were pretty clumsy about it, but he didn't say anything, and the Industry sailed away towards Cadiz, and the ship brig turned to the north. They sailed all the rest of that day towards the coast of Spain, which was on their way to Leghorn anyway. Captain Soule kept his eyes open, for he hadn't given up hoping for a chance to get the ship back again, but the chance didn't seem very good, with only the two mates and himself against the 10 Spaniards. And that night, there must have been something the matter with the watch that the Spaniards kept, for when there was light enough to see in the morning, there was a big English warship close to them. She was big enough to swallow the Industry whole, and never to know the difference. Captain Soule laughed right out loud when the Spaniards first saw her. He had known about her nearly half the night. The Spaniards never once thought of fighting, but surrendered right off. It would have been very foolish for them to fight, for they were only 10 men in a ship that wasn't fitted for fighting, and the English ship was a big ship fitted up on purpose to fight, and she had a crew of 300 or 400 men. So a boat soon put off from the English ship with sailors in it and came to the side of the Industry, and Captain Soule was hurrying to put a ladder over so that the English officer could come up without any trouble. But the officer didn't wait for any ladder. He and his men swarmed up the side like flies. And Captain Soule met the officer, and he laughed and said that he was glad to see him. And the officer smiled and wondered why that was, and he shook hands with Captain Soule. And then Captain Soule and the officer went into the cabin together, and Captain Soule told the officer about the Spanish privateer. When the officer had heard the story, he said it was hard luck, but as the vessel was a Spanish prize, he should have to take her. He thought that the Admiralty Court would fix that matter all right, and Captain Soule sighed and said that he hoped so, but he didn't know much about Admiralty Courts. He had understood that American owners were apt to get the worst of it, and then Captain Soule and the officer had a glass of wine together, and it was so good that they each had another glass, and then they went on deck. The officer bundled the Spaniards into the boat and left 10 Englishmen to take their places, apologizing to Captain Soule for leaving him so short-handed. The Industry generally had a crew of 25 to 30 men. Then the officer got into the boat and rowed away. Captain Soule was to take the Industry to Gibraltar, which was right on the way to Leghorn too. It was pretty near, so he thought to get there the next day. Then Captain Soule had an idea. He served out a little rum first, and he told the crew that if nothing happened, he would take the ship straight to Gibraltar, but the Spaniards were pretty thick between where they were and Gibraltar, so he thought he would ask them a question. If they should be taken by the Spaniards again, and the crew should be left on board, would they agree to sign as his crew for a voyage to Leghorn and other ports? When the English sailors heard that, some of them began to grin, and they talked together for a little while, and then they said that they would agree to do as Captain Soule had said. And Captain Soule was pleased, and he served out another helping of rum all around. The sailors called it grog. Sure enough, they were captured again the next morning, before they had gotten within sight of Gibraltar, and the Spanish ship put on board the Industry a prize crew of 9 men. But she left the English crew on board, for she had already taken several other prizes, and she had put other prize crews on board of those prizes, and she had their crews as prisoners. And her captain was afraid to have more prisoners because he would have nearly as many prisoners as he had men left in his crew. Then the Spanish ship told Captain Soule to steer for Algiers, and she sailed away about her business. Captain Soule did as he was told and steered for Algiers, but in the night of that day, the two mates went while the Spanish crew weren't looking, and they set free the Englishmen and gave them a paper to sign. That paper made them Captain Soule's sailors, and then they gave each man pistols and a cutlass, and the first mate took half of the Englishmen and went to the forecastle, where 4 men of the Spanish crew were sleeping, and the second mate took the other five Englishmen, and he went on deck, where the other five men of the Spanish crew were on watch, but he hid his Englishmen. And Captain Soule was walking back and forth on the quarter-deck, and suddenly he began to whistle softly, and all the Englishmen sprang out, and they had that Spanish crew captured before they knew what had happened, but they didn't have to hurt anybody, they captured them so quickly. Then Captain Soule changed the course of the Industry so that she was heading for Leghorn, and he got to Leghorn in due time, but he had some trouble in getting rid of his Spanish prisoners. And nobody ever knew whether Captain Soule meant to be captured by the Spaniards that last time or not. And that's all.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed. That's one small step for man. One giant leap for mankind.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Fighting Moose Podcast. Please join us next time as we read another exciting story. Today's music was provided by the artist Analog by Nature, and the audio clips were provided from NASA. For more information to download and or listen to audio or materials from all our recordings, or to contact us, please visit www.thefightingmoose.com or you can follow the links in the show notes. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcast or on iTunes and tell a friend. Thank you for your patronage, and as always, try and do a random act of kindness every day.
Mission complete, Houston. After serving the world for over 30 years, the space shuttle's out.